This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor C3 AI. C3 Generative AI equips enterprises with verified, traceable answers. It's secure, hallucination-free, LLM agnostic, and IP liability-free. Learn more at c3.ai. This is Enterprise AI.
This is your tech news briefing for Thursday, February 4th. I'm Amanda Llewellyn for the Wall Street Journal. When President Dwight Eisenhower created NASA as an independent agency in 1958, he resisted pressure to make it part of the Pentagon. Instead, he wanted a firewall between the two to keep civilian and military uses of space separate. But now, officials are working to remove some of those barriers. Our senior special writer Andy Pastor will join us to explain why they're doing it and what it could mean for the future of U.S. space missions after these headlines. The board of the lightly moderated social media platform Parler has fired its chief executive, John Mates. Mates said in a statement that he'd met, quote, constant resistance to his product vision and his view of how the site should be managed. Parler has been working to restore service for its users since tech giants forced the platform offline in the wake of the Capitol riot on January 6th, saying Parler wasn't able to sufficiently police its content. And earlier this week, Amazon said that Andy Jassy would be taking over as CEO from founder Jeff Bezos. Jassy's been the chief architect and evangelist for the company's cloud computing arm, Amazon Web Services, ever since it launched in 2006. He helped build AWS from an untested idea to a multi-billion dollar business. Jassy's promotion is a sign that the company will be continuing its focus on the cloud. While Amazon has a strong position in the market, our reporter Aaron Tilley says cloud computing is becoming more competitive.
For many years, Amazon was really the only game in town. They pioneered this model of a cloud infrastructure platform player, and there have been other players that have tried to jump on board, but lots have failed. And really, over the past few years, I'd say the past 4 or 5, we've seen Microsoft really starting to grow quickly in that regard. Under Satya Nadella, when he took over in 2014, he really refocused and put the company into sort of a cloud-first mode. And that has really started to pay dividends over the past few years and is now catching up to Amazon quite a bit. We also see Google not growing as rapidly as Microsoft, but certainly a viable player here.
All right, coming up after the break, the military and civilian sides of government are increasingly working together on projects in space. We'll talk about that next.
This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor C3 AI. Insights. You need them to solve business problems, but buried in volumes of disparate data, they're seemingly invisible. C3 Generative AI enables business leaders to instantly access secure, hallucination-free, verifiable insights from a unified knowledge source, all with a natural language search. Turn the invisible into the obvious with C3 Generative AI. Learn more at c3.ai.
Until recently, U.S. space projects have been pretty clearly separated into either civilian or military purposes. But we report that officials at the Pentagon and at NASA are knocking down some longstanding barriers between their agencies, making it easier for them to work together on projects in outer space. For more on this and what it could mean for our relationship to space, I'm joined by our senior special writer, Andy Pastor. Hey, Andy, thanks for being here.
Good to be with you.
So I want to start with a little bit of history. Up to recently, what has the division of labor looked like between the military and civilian efforts in space?
So this issue goes back to the late 1950s when NASA was formed. President Eisenhower actually made a point, despite pressure from the Pentagon and congressional leaders to make NASA part of the Pentagon, he decided for a variety of strategic reasons, among which were that he wanted to share science with other countries, that NASA would be a civilian agency. So that's how it started. And through the years, there has been collaboration. There has been some sharing of scientific information. In fact, the space shuttle, when NASA developed it and was operating it, was supposed to launch military satellites. But essentially, the division has been pretty clear publicly that civilian space was one aspect of what the U.S. did, and military space was another aspect. And that has really shifted both in focus and in reality, I would say, increasingly over the years, but particularly over the last 4 years, during the Trump administration.
Yeah, and let's talk about that. Why are the barriers coming down now, and who's driving the change?
So there are a couple of reasons. Number one, of course, is that there's increased emphasis on competition in space, military competition in space, but also commercial competition in space in other spacefaring countries, particularly China and Russia, but also India and Japan. And so there's this confluence of forces. The military is much more concerned about protecting its space assets and also concerned about protecting NASA and commercial space assets because of the changes in the international situation. In addition, NASA, of course, has a lot of expertise, training scientists. It has done maneuvers and docking in space. It has spacecraft of its own. And so there's a sense increasingly in the government, in the federal government, that for taxpayers and for America's future, it's a good idea to work much more closely together.
And, you know, Andy, you and I have talked on the show before about NASA's increasing reliance on public-private partnerships in space. We've talked about them working with companies like Elon Musk's SpaceX, for instance. Does that play in here as well?
Yes, absolutely. It's sort of the third leg of this tripod. Both the military and NASA want to work much more closely with private industry in a real collaborative sense because, once again, less expensive and more expertise, and you can do much more quickly. And the military also feels the same way. So really, you have these three forces coming together. The change has been that in the past couple of years, there have been some very strong policy statements which sort of set the tone. I mean, space, everybody says space is hard and rockets are rocket science and things take a long time to develop, and that's all true. So what we've had happening in the past couple of years are very specific policy statements laying out the kinds of things that the Pentagon and NASA want to cooperate on. Nuclear power in space, refueling satellites in space, looking at the area around the moon in terms of surveilling what's there, moving satellites around in space to different orbits, maybe reposition, not just repositioning, but repurposing and repairing satellites. Those are just some of the things that have been discussed, and the framework is now set for NASA and the military, with help from companies, to really be able to do that in a what the proponents call an all-of-government approach. That means all the government agencies and the private sector working together to solve really, really formidable problems. So that's sort of the long-term view.
Yeah, and looking to the future, you know, it sounds like you're saying that this is the beginning of a new normal in terms of our policy approach. What kind of future does all this spell out?
To begin with, a more contentious future. China and other countries clearly have many of the same goals. And China and Russia, for example, don't even have the pretense of saying that their civilian and military programs are somehow different. I mean, they say they are, they claim they are, but in fact, it's just one big national program run by the same people with different projects and goals. So first of all, it'll be much more contentious. There'll be much more competition for military dominance, but also for commercial dominance. I mean, eventually we'll be looking at mining water and minerals on the moon or asteroids. We'll be talking about manufacturing things in orbit. And so all of that will create much more competition. But in the short term, I think what we're looking at is a real strong effort by the U.S. to say to potential hostile countries, the military is intent on protecting U.S. assets. It doesn't matter whether they're military assets, private assets or NASA assets. We're going to protect them the best way we can by, you know, looking at what satellites are near them, what dangers there may be, how we can prevent all sorts of attacks, whether it's laser attacks or attacking the computer systems. And so I think for the short term, there'll be a lot of that posturing. But for the longer term, it sets up a real competition in space for all these different reasons.
And Andy, just to broaden out here for a second, I'm wondering where this leaves all the private companies who are now being brought into this effort. You know, we've seen a pretty big outcry from employees at places like Google, for instance, when their technology has been used for military purposes. What do we know about these private companies and where this leaves them and their employees?
Well, I think that's an important point. It's not clear exactly how it plays out. It is clear that many of the space companies, the new commercial space companies, the young engineers and maybe the not so young engineers are working away as hard as they can because they really have a concept of much broader than what the military has. I mean, they're looking at colonizing, you know, Mars, at going deeper into the solar system, of making life better on Earth. And not to say that the military doesn't share that goal, but it's a different perspective. So I think it is possible that as the military and civilian agencies move closer together, that some of these companies might have internal issues, but that has not cropped up yet. And I think one of the reasons is because many of these private companies already do work for the Pentagon. They may be doing different kinds of work. They may be doing simpler kinds of work. They may be, in some cases, just subcontractors, but they already have employees with access to classified information. They already are trying to woo the Pentagon as a customer. So it's not too big a jump to say, well, you know, NASA and the Pentagon are working together and we're just part of that bigger team. But it is possible that we'll see, you know, some opposition as there's more talk about weapons in space, because I mean, so much of the talk so far has been defensive, trying to protect assets, trying to predict what others are doing, trying to make sure that potential hostile countries don't take action. It's all defensive. But I think we are moving to the point where actively the U.S. and other countries are looking at offensive weapons in space. And that could be a different kind of debate for somebody who works at a company looking to do other things in space, basically.
All right, that's our senior special writer, Andy Pastor. Thanks, Andy.
You're very welcome.
That's it for today's Tech News Briefing. You can find more tech stories on our website, WSJ.com. And if you like our show, please do rate and review us in your app store. It really does help. I'm Amanda Llewellyn for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor C3 AI. C3 Generative AI equips enterprises with verified, traceable answers. It's secure, hallucination-free, LLM agnostic, and IP liability-free. Learn more at c3.ai. This is Enterprise AI.